yet. Benji Patterson is with me, independent economist at benjipatterson.co.nz. And a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Kerry. How are you going?
Very well. Happy New Year. I think we can still say that, can't we, till February?
It's the first time we've spoken, so yes.
Yes, that's right. So, just a question. Why aren't, or why isn't paying more the problem?
Well, I guess paying more, it's not a simple overnight fix for some business models. Mm-hmm. They've become so accustomed over the years to a cheap pool of labour, and at a time when for some industries their revenue has been impaired, it's hard for them to get their head around the sort of chicken or egg that they need the staff to deliver the product, but they have to pay more at a time where their profit margins are squeezed to actually get their hands on these staff members. But it's about thinking long term about this issue.
Yep.
And it's about thinking about, if I want to continue to run my business sustainably over the long run, how can I ensure that I deliver a high value product that the customers are going to want, that I can earn very good revenue for, and at the same time I can ensure that I can deliver it by having a pool of staff that are there for the long term. And as part of that equation, there does need to be a reflection of what wages are so that you can keep and retain your workers.
Do consumers need to stop being so greedy? Because I'm old enough to remember that back in the day when I was a teenager, if you wanted a dress, you put it on lay-by and it took you about 6 weeks of part-time job and putting all that money into the dress to get it. Today, because of globalisation, you can walk into a shop and get one for $8.
Yeah, we are accustomed to getting what we need when we want it at quite cheap prices. I think we need to think a lot more holistically about our consumption. And so on one hand, this is about if you're wanting to support local businesses and we're not in such a high production, low margin environment, we need to think about perhaps consuming slightly less, but valuing what we consume more,
yep.
Putting an emphasis on the dividends that flow through into our community from that. So that's, you know, in the service industries, that's those workers that are on relatively low wages compared with professionals, on valuing that if we pay a little bit more for our product, if we get very good service, we're supporting those within our community, that has to form part of it. You know, the other side of it is that this is also about sustainability from an environmental perspective.
Yes. Yeah, we've become so wasteful and greedy, and you did used to have maybe 3 or 4 dresses in your wardrobe, one for good, one for every day, you know, and one for spare, and that was it. Whereas now you just churn through, oh, I don't know, 30 or 40 a year if you're a kid.
Yeah, exactly. And I think really what COVID-19 has provided us with is we've been forced to rethink how we do things. And I think a silver lining that comes out of it is if we become more intentional in what we do in every respect as a business owner, in terms of how we plan and how we think about our business long term, and also as a consumer, how we think about, you know, not just the value we're deriving here and now from that consumption, but how that can enhance, you know, long term what's happening in our community for people, you know, and for the environment.
Because I know that, you know, the 60s and 70s, well, the 60s perhaps not so much, but the 70s were very monochrome, and there wasn't a great deal of excitement, and everybody was very sort of, it was a kind of utilitarian, but it did mean that the school caretaker could own their own home, and in effect that was a cleaner, could own your own home, raise your own kids, send them off to school with the doctor's kids and the headmaster's kids, and provide for their family, which I think is really important for the human psyche.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, the unfortunate reality with where we've got to in New Zealand is that sort of lifestyle has become out of reach in our urban centres in particular, but increasingly even in some of the regional areas. However, that being said, you know, there are still some limited parts of New Zealand where that lifestyle is possible. And it's actually those places we're seeing at present that are, you know, that are having some of the sharpest growth in house prices at present, because people are cottoning on to they have to think more laterally and going into the region. So, you know, we've seen recently, you know, the extraordinary lift in house prices in places like Gisborne, for example.
Yeah. I wonder if the young generation are going to be the ones that actually are the ones who are more thoughtful and who understand that by having less, it means those who are paid less get more.
It's certainly something that has increasingly, you know, been something that's been talked about and has been pushed. And, you know, and I believe, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, the government has moved towards, you know, bringing wellbeing budgeting into how they think about their fiscal position. So rather than it just being dollars and cents, that you bring in the softer things that, you know, that are intangible things in life. So, you know, your social, your cultural, your environmental wellbeing. And I mean, these things have been brewing for a while. So what you typically see following any crisis is that existing distributional distortions in society, that they are exacerbated. So what we saw after the global financial crisis, for example, was a really big asset price bubble, and the gaps between the haves and the have-nots, that they widened. And that manifested in the United States and the Walk on Wall Street movement. And it's something that we're seeing played out again following COVID-19. Well, I guess we're still in the midst of the pandemic. Mm. And at least, you know, one of the fantastic things is we are seeing both, you know, government policy acknowledging and hoping to mitigate any of these challenges. We're also seeing, you know, some businesses beginning to do the right thing and pay back wage subsidies that they hadn't ended up needing, realising that money needs to be recirculated to help those that are more vulnerable. But, of course, there are still things that are occurring as part of this. We're seeing that if you look through employment statistics, that youth are the ones that have bared the brunt of it so far. They are the ones that have lost their jobs. In fact, people in their prime working years, there's been an expansion to employment in most places. You know, we've also seen that, you know, house prices, you know, have gone up so significantly. So those that aren't in home ownership at present haven't been able to lift their wealth levels to anything like the extent of those that own.
Mm. So when you've got the people who are still crying out for labour and who need it now, what would be your response to them?
Well, unfortunately, there's no silver bullet. It is actually quite a multi-pronged approach. So on one hand, you know, there is a real need to be able to bring more people through the border system as it stands, so prioritisation of those skills. So that, you know, that's one part of it. Another is looking at people that may not be within the industry at present, that may have recently retired or might have moved laterally into something else, thinking about ways to entice those people back in to work in your industry.
Mm-hmm.
Another is also for those that are there, being as flexible as you can as an employer. Now, I know that's not possible in some industries when, you know, things need harvesting the day they're ready, but where possible, letting people fit their work around their lifestyle. Now, that can be particularly important for people with young children, so being more amenable to allowing the school pick up and drop off within your day. Paying more does also need to be part of the equation. So for an owner of a business, it may be allowing their profit margin to be a little bit more squeezed so that they can retain those staff and they can continue to do what they do. But long term, as part of this, you know, we do really need to think about what industries our skills gaps are in, where those are located in the country, and what are the impediments at present to getting people into those roles? Because it's not just as simple as making training available. It's about making sure that there are the right incentives in place for people, you know, and the right, you know, employment structures there so that the roles are appealing.
I thank you, as always, for your insights. Good to talk, Benji Patterson. Independent economist, benjipatterson.co.nz. That's B-E-N-J-E, Patterson, P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N.co.nz. 11:20.